Hi, David Irma here. This is For the Record, program number 1064, Socialists for Trump and Hitler. This is being recorded on March 19th of the year 2019. I've been developing a working hypothesis that the left wing of the Democratic Party, people who call themselves socialists, people around St. Bernard, Bernie Sanders, around Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and again, the left wing of the Democratic Party that is already disrupting things, that is being targeted by the Republican propaganda, and providing the Republican propagandists with no small amount of fodder. I suspect that what we are looking at is yet another example of not only GOP, but very possibly CIA interference in the political process here in the U.S. We have spoken at great length about this country's political assassinations and other examples of intelligence involvement in the manipulation of American politics. For the record, 896 through 899, we spoke about not just the dalliance between the GOP and the Iranian fundamentalists, but the actual elevation of Ayatollah Khomeini and his Islamic fundamentalists in Iran as a vehicle not only for putting an Islamic republic and anti-communist entity on the southern flank of the former Soviet Union, but also as a vehicle for destabilizing Jimmy Carter. We have spoken at length about this country's political assassinations, most recently in a 25-hour interview series with Jim DiGenio about his book, Destiny Betrayed, point being that the intel community has long interfered in our political process, and they have done so in tandem with the GOP. Karl Rove, the Machiavellian operative in the Republican Party, was discovered, as we looked at in our interviews with Ross Baker, author of Family of Secrets, recruited by George Bush, discovered by George Bush, for whom CIA headquarters is named. I suspect we're looking at something similar vis-a-vis Bernie Sanders and AOC and others. I think that basically using the, quote, socialists, unquote, as a vehicle for discrediting the Democrats and swinging the election to Donald Trump and company is something that is extant. Very quickly, beginning with what we looked at the end of our last program, Washington Post article, August 1st of last year, 2018, Damon Milbank, The Deep Cynicism of Bernie Sanders, Chief Strategist. Tad Devine, capital T-A-D, capital D-E-V-I-N-E, during his run as Chief Strategist for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign, railed against the corrupting influence of money in politics, giving down. Thanks to Robert Mueller's prosecution of Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign chairman and sometime business associate of Devine, we now have an unusual glimpse into the role of the Democratic ad man, had in electing and preserving the power of Ukraine's Viktor Yanukovych. Devine's seamless pivot from advocate for anti-democratic thug to champion of a principled democratic reformer shows extraordinary flexibility. As we have looked at in the For the Record program 1008 and FTR's 1022 and 23, there is a very strong body of evidence that Paul Manafort was a U.S. intelligence officer and that his work on behalf of Yanukovych was not because he was a Russian agent, but because he was working to get Yanukovych to sign the EU Association Agreement, working in that context with the Habsburg Group in order to maneuver Ukraine from the Russian into the Western orbit. Ultimately, Yanukovych did not sign the EU Association Agreement. Not only would it have imposed austerity on him, but through Russian pressure, and Russia had been the largest trading partner for Ukraine. He ultimately backed out. Then there was Plan B, or as I termed it, Plan O-U-N-B, and the Banderites, the O-U-N-B fascists, or the successor organizations to the O-U-N-B in Ukraine, came to power. We will be updating that in a couple of weeks. If this were an isolated thing, having the chief strategist for Bernie Sanders' 2016 campaign working with probable U.S. intelligence officer Paul Manafort alongside Viktor Yanukovych in the time period in which Manafort was attempting to maneuver Ukraine from the Russian into the Western orbit, I might say, well, maybe that was coincidence. I do not, however, think so. Bear in mind that Manafort was Donald Trump's 2016 campaign manager at the same time as his former associate alongside Viktor Yanukovych, Tad Devine, was the chief strategist for Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. We're going to take a look at some of the deep politics surrounding the destabilization of and ultimately downfall of the former Soviet Union, and also the implementation of the radical privatization program that not only economically devastated Russia, it also proved to be a disaster in many of the other former Soviet republics. And the chief, arguably the chief architect of that, a guy named Jeffrey Sachs, S-A-C-H-S, is a member of the Sanders Institute, along with Tulsi Gabbard, and is a major economic advisor to Bernie Sanders. He also is a major economic advisor to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as well. And I wonder if some of the economic illiteracy that Ms. Ocasio-Cortez has demonstrated so far has anything to do with the whispers in her young ear of Jeffrey Sachs. More about that later, however. We're going to dip back into the archives from September 6th of 1992, from AFA program number 37, and excerpt the reading of an article called The Republican Party and Fascists, The Old Nazis and the New Right, by Russ Ballant, B-E-L-L-A-N-T. This is from Covert Action Information Bulletin issue number 33. Now, in For the Record program number 1058, we reviewed the Galen spy organization, the fact that when it jumped to CIA, it did so initially with the approval not only of Admiral Karl von Dönitz, who succeeded Hitler as the master of Germany, but also with the approval of General Franz Halder, who had been Galen's chief of staff, indicating that basically the Nazi chain of command was still in effect. After that, Galen also conferred very closely with Heinrich Müller, the former head of the Gestapo and director of security for the remarkable and deadly Bormann Flight Capital outfit, and someone who appears to have gone to work for U.S. intelligence as well. Certainly, Müller's outfit worked with the CIA. Ultimately, organizations like the OUNB, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Croatian Ustashi, the Bulgarian National Front, and others were part of the Galen spy organization. They also morphed into the Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Group. That was a key Nazi element of the Republican Party that evolved from the Crusade for Freedom, founded by Alan Dulles, led by Richard Nixon, fronted for by Ronald Reagan, taking advantage of the State Department machinations of William Casey, and ultimately morphed, installed as a permanent branch of the Republican Party by George Herbert Walker Bush. The Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization stemmed again from, basically was comprised of Eastern European fascist groups that were originally drawn together into the constellation that became the Committee of Subjugated Nations in 1943 and that previously provided on-the-ground collaboration for the Third Reich's forces in Europe, the glue that held those organizations together. Again, the OUNB, the Bulgarian National Front, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Croatian Ustaše, and others, was the Nazi SS. Keep that in mind because we're going to recap the composition of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. Then we are going to take a look at how that was projected into the former Soviet Union by Paul Weyrich and his Free Congress Foundation, and how that in turn networked with the Interregional Deputies Group of Boris Yeltsin. Then eventually, after the Soviet Union precipitously disintegrated, and instead of a gradual privatization program, an altogether rapid, too rapid privatization program was installed. The resulting disaster is something that is really with us today. The oligarch system in place in Ukraine, in Russia, and elsewhere is a direct outgrowth of that strategy. And the person who worked with Boris Yeltsin, basically who had the ball handed off to him by people like Laszlo Pastor and the Crusade for Freedom Nazi branch of the Republican Party, is Jeffrey Sachs. He is one of the top economic advisors to Bernie Sanders, a member of the Sanders Institute, and is also an advisor to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We're going to go now back in order to recap some of the history of the destabilization of the Soviet Union and how people like Jeffrey Sachs fit into this historical progression. We're going to go back into the archives from, again, September 6, 1992. The Republican Party and Fascists, the Old Nazis and the New Right by Russ Ballant, Covert Action Information Bulletin, issue number 33.
We begin by taking a look at, Russ Ballant's article. It is May 17th, 1985. Ronald Reagan has been back in the nation's capital less than 2 weeks after his much-criticized trip to the Bitburg Cemetery in West Germany. Now, floodlights and television cameras that are part of a president's entourage are waiting at the Shoreham Hotel as our 400 luncheon guests. Ronald Reagan had recently characterized the Nazi Waffen-SS as, quote, victims, unquote, and these comments held special meaning for some of his afternoon luncheon guests. Although it was a Republican Party affair, it was not the usual GOP set, but a special ethnic outreach unit, the National Republican Heritage Groups and Nationalities Council, RHGC. The RHGC is an umbrella for various ethnic Republican clubs and operates under the auspices of the Republican National Committee. It has a special type of outreach and appears to have consciously recruited some of its members and some of its leaders from an Eastern European emigre network which includes anti-Semites, racists, authoritarians, and fascists, including sympathizers and collaborators of Hitler's Third Reich, former Nazis, and even possible war criminals. The persons in this network are a part of the radical right faction of the ethnic communities they claim to represent. These anti-democratic and racialist components of the RHGC use anti-communist sentiments as a cover for their views while they operate as a de facto emigre fascist network within the Republican Party. Interrupting, bear in mind that one of the major strategic concepts of the Third Reich for conquest was anti-communism. They learned to use anti-communism or fear of communism as a vehicle for conquest. The last sentence again. These anti-democratic and racialist components of the RHGC use anti-communist sentiments as a cover for their views while they operate as a de facto emigre fascist network within the Republican Party. Of course, the strategic use of anti-communism and fear of communism is the major element in the strategy that the Galen Organization employed in order to exert its effect on American society. Utilizing, again, powerful domestic American political, economic, and national security elements with whose views the Galen assessments jibed, they were able to use anti-communism and the fear of communism to have the profound effects on the United States that they had. This is a realization of a major tactic of conquest by the Third Reich. Continuing, some of the unsavory personalities who were present in that 1985 luncheon audience would later join the 1988 election campaign of President George Bush. This fascist network within the Republican Party represents a small but significant element of the coalition which brought Ronald Reagan into the White House. It is from this network that the George Bush presidential campaign assembled its ethnic outreach unit in 1988, a unit that saw 8 resignations by persons charged with anti-Semitism, racism, and even Nazi collaboration. This network organizes support for its ideological agenda through national and international coalitions of like-minded constituencies which often work with other pro-fascist groups. This broader coalition ranges from Axis allies and their apologists to friends and allies of contemporary dictatorships and authoritarian regimes. In the case of the Republican Heritage Groups Council, the nature of this network can be illustrated by briefly reviewing the backgrounds of some of the past and current leadership. First name is very important. Laszlo Pastor, Laszlo Pastor. The founding chair and a key figure in the council, Pastor began his political career in a Hungarian pro-Nazi party and served in Berlin at the end of World War II. He continues to be involved in ultra-rightist groups and fascist networks while working with the GOP. Again, begins his political career in the Hungarian Arrow Cross organization, serves in Berlin at the end of World War II, and again quoting Ballant, he continues to be involved in ultra-rightist groups and fascist networks while working with the GOP. Radi Slavov, R-A-D-I, capital S-L-A-V-O-F-F. The RHGC's executive director is a member of a Bulgarian fascist group and leader of the Bulgarian GOP unit of the council. He was able to get the leader of his Bulgarian nationalist group an invitation to the White House, even though the leader was being investigated for concealing alleged World War II war crimes. He is also active in other emigre fascist groups. Nicholas Nazarenko, N-I-C-O-L-A-S, N-A-Z-A-R-E-N-K-O, a former World War II officer in the German SS Cossack Division, Nazarenko heads the Cossack GOP unit of the Republican Heritage Groups Council and has declared that Jews are his, quote, ideological enemy, unquote. He is still active with pro-Nazi elements in the U.S. Florian Galdau, G-A-L-D-A-U. He is a close associate and defender of Valerian Trifa, that's V-A-L-E-R-I-A-N-T-R-I-F-A, the Romanian archbishop prosecuted for concealing his involvement in war crimes of the pro-Nazi Romanian Iron Guard. Charged by former Iron Guardists and others with being the East Coast recruiter for the Iron Guard in the U.S., Galdau heads the Romanian Republican unit of the RHGC. Philip A. Guarino, G-U-A-R-I-N-O. He is an honorary American member of the conspiratorial P2 Masonic Lodge of Italy, which plotted in the early 1970s to overthrow the Italian government in order to install a dictatorship. Guarino, an Italian Heritage Council member and Republican National Committee advisor, offered aid to those P2 members being investigated. Recall, obviously, we've seen how Nicholas Nazarenko was a member of a World War II Waffen-SS division, Philip Guarino, part of the P2 Lodge. Now, bear in mind that the P2 Lodge, headed up by Licio Gelli, is headed up by a fellow who was an officer in the SS during World War II. And again, bear in mind that one of the major Third Reich plans for surviving defeat was to have the post-World War II Reich grouped around the SS and Gestapo. Bear in mind that, as we saw, also, we've taken a look at this in past segments of this archive show, an element of the mythology generated by Alfred Rosenberg's Ostministerium during the Third Reich was that Cossackia was a separate nation. We now find the Cossack GOP unit of the Republican Heritage Groups Council, despite the fact there is not a Cossackia in the Soviet Union. Again, this representing an evolution of a Nazi political concept into a Republican Party unit. We took a look at Valerian Trifa in a big way. in Radio Free America program number 2. This fellow was invited to give the opening convocation before the U.S. Senate in 1955 by Richard Nixon. And recall that we took a look at how he came in, that is to say, Valerian Trifa, an associate of Florian Galdau, how Valerian Trifa came to the United States as a result of his work for the Galen Organization. Again, Radio Free America number 2. We took a look at the P2 Lodge in Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, particularly numbers 17 and 19. Skipping down and continuing with Russ Ballant's article, the Displaced Persons Commission, which worked from 1948 to 1952, arranged for approximately 400,000 persons to come to the U.S. Initially, it sought to bar members of pro-Nazi groups, but in 1950 a dramatic reversal took place. The commission declared, quote, the Baltic Legion not to be a movement hostile to the government of the United States, unquote. The Baltic Legion was also known as the Baltic Waffen or Armed SS. Now again, this is declared, quote, not to be a movement hostile to the government of the United States, unquote. Famous last words. Continuing, the final report of the commission noted that the decision, quote, was the subject of considerable controversy, unquote, as well it should have been. The Waffen-SS participated in the liquidation of Jews in the Baltic region because the SS units were comprised of Hitler's loyal henchmen recruited from fascist political groups long tied to the German Nazi Party. Remember the Baltics, including Lithuania. We're going to come back to them later. Anyone opposed to the German occupation of the Baltic region, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, was likely to meet a cruel death at their hands. They were now considered qualified to come to the United States to become American citizens. Further, pro-Nazi elements from other parts of Europe came to the U.S. through nominally private groups associated with the commission. In 1952, the commission completed its work. The Eisenhower-Nixon presidential campaign was on, and the Republicans were charging the Democrats with being, quote, soft on communism, unquote. Talk of, quote, liberating, unquote, Eastern Europe became part of the GOP message. That year, the Republican National Committee formed an ethnic division. Displaced fascists, hoping to be returned to power by an Eisenhower-Nixon, quote, liberation, unquote, policy, were among those who signed on. This would become the embryo for the formation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council in 1969. In a sense, however, the foundation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council lay in Hitler's networks in Eastern Europe before World War II. In many Eastern European countries, the German SS set up or funded political action organizations that helped form SS militias during the war. Last two sentences again, because they're critical. In a sense, however, the foundation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council lay in Hitler's networks in Eastern Europe before World War II. In many Eastern European countries, the German SS set up or funded political action organizations that helped form SS militias during the war. In Hungary, for example, the Arrow Cross was the Hungarian SS affiliate. In Romania, the Iron Guard. The Bulgarian Legion, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, the Latvian Legion, and the Belarusians, White Russians, Belarus Brigade, were all SS-linked.
That again from the archives, AF-857 from September 6th of 1992. Now note not only the Nazi character of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Group, but its profound links to the OUNB, who ultimately came to power through the Maidan coup, which ultimately was Plan B or Plan OUNB for moving Ukraine from the Russian into the Western orbit. Paul Manafort, a probable U.S. intelligence officer working with the Habsburg Group, and we talked about that, and for the record, 1,022, 1,023, 1,008, and working with, among others, in the early stages, Tad Devine. Tad Devine, Bernie Sanders' chief strategist for his 2016 campaign. Paul Manafort, the 2016 campaign manager for Donald Trump. Ultimately, that same milieu, the SS linked, or and really, well, the the organizations that comprised the Republican Nazi group ultimately were glued together by the SS. And again, they became a key element of the Republican Party. They were a key element of the Galen spy outfit as well, part of the Underground Reich.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
In a succeeding issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin, number 35 from the fall of 1990, there was another article, this co-authored by Russ Belamp and Lewis Wolf, W-O-O-L-F, the former editor of Covert Action Information Bulletin. This called The Free Congress Foundation Goes East. We're going to listen to a portion of a reading of that. This is from AFA program number 36 from October of 1991.
It's called The Free Congress Foundation Goes East. Once again, co-authored by Russ Belant and Lewis Wolf, it reads in part as follows. With the rapid pace of political change sweeping Eastern Europe and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, many opportunities have emerged for Western interests to intervene in the politics of that region. In some cases, such a vacuum has been created that virtual strangers to the area several years ago are now able to actively participate in changing those societies from within. These interventions are not only being practiced by mainstream organizations. The involvement of the United States far right brings with it the potential revival of fascist organizations in the East. One U.S. group, the Free Congress Foundation, has been playing a role in Eastern European and Soviet politics and has ties to Boris Yeltsin and the Interregional Deputies Group, or IRG, in the USSR. Now, once again, this is the most important single element in this article on the subject of it, the Free Congress Foundation, and we should bear in mind for future discussion that they are tied directly to Boris Yeltsin, as we shall see. Continuing here with Belant and Wolf's article, the Free Congress Foundation, or FCF, was founded in 1974 by Paul Weyrich, W-E-Y-R-I-C-H, as the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress. Weyrich, who had started the Heritage Foundation the year before, was heavily funded by the Coors family for both organizations. I would interrupt that Paul Weyrich is one of the major strategic planners and one of the major figures in the so-called New Right. Why I call it so-called, I will outline here later. He is one of the individuals credited with the political action committees and direct mail techniques which helped boost Ronald Reagan and later George Bush into their present situations. Although, as I've looked at in these archive shows, the stage was set for the Reagan and Bush ascendancy by political assassination, not Paul Weyrich. Continuing here, but it should be noted that in addition to the survival, the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress, now the Free Congress Foundation, Weyrich founded the Heritage Foundation, an absolutely pivotal right-wing think tank, which, again, is very close to both the Reagan and Bush administrations. Continuing here, and bear in mind that this organization, as we shall see, is heavily involved in the Soviet Union, specifically with elements around Boris Yeltsin. Continuing with the article, Weyrich has kept one foot in the right wing of the Republican Party while dallying with the racist right and the extreme Christian right. In 1976, for instance, he and a handful of other new rightists, William Rusher, Morton Blackwell, and Richard Viguerie, attempted to take over the segregationist American Independent Party, or AIP, formed by George Wallace in 1968. The AIP was an amalgam of Ku Klux Klan and John Birch Society elements. In 1982, Weyrich published an essay in which he stated, quote, "Culturally destructive government policies, racial hiring quotas, and busing come to mind as examples, are to the new right more immediately important in the realm of action since the damage they can do is enormous and practically irremediable," unquote. This apparent defense of, quote, white culture, unquote, is dangerously close to theories advocated by white supremacists today. FCF's direct involvement in Eastern Europe began about a year ago at the urging of one of its directors, Robert Kriebel, K-R-I-E-B-L-E, a retired Connecticut businessman. His Kriebel Foundation backed efforts in late 1989 to send Weyrich and four associates to Hungary and the Soviet Union, including Estonia, to help train right-wing leaders in ideological and electoral matters. I would interject here, Estonia is now one of the Baltic republics pushing for independence. Weyrich stated upon his return that his visit to Moscow was, quote, the most incredible experience of our lives, unquote. There, he worked with the IRG of the Supreme Soviet, a leadership body of the Communist Party. He says that they were unequivocally in favor of private property, a market economy, and the restoration of religion. The IRG was established by Andrei Sakharov, Boris Yeltsin, and others in the summer of 1989. By the end of that year, a training school had been established for candidates to put forward the IRG program. Their electoral success this year propelled Yeltsin to the leadership of the Russian Soviet Socialist Republic. He immediately began forging collaborative relationships with the deeply reactionary leaders of the Lithuanian Sąjūdis Party. The IRG has also served as a source of right-wing pressure on Gorbachev to dismantle socialism and the Soviet Union itself. Now recall, in the very first installment of this archive series, I analyzed another very important article. I read into the record another very important article dealing with Sąjūdis and the restoration of fascism in Lithuania, because Sąjūdis is inextricably linked with the history of Lithuanian fascism. And it's interesting to see Boris Yeltsin now hooking up with Sąjūdis, an ironic name. Perhaps instead of S-A-J-U-D-I-S, it should be spelled S-A capital J-U-D-A-S, because it looks like that's basically where they're at, Sąjūdis. And it should be noted here, as before we proceed into this particular article, that in the Sean Gervaisi article that I read into the record last week, the destabilization paradigm involves two basic elements. The first is external pressure, and I have spoken about that in the first two installments. The second is internal manipulation. And I'm going to reread a short section of the Sean Gervaisi article. Again, this is called the Full Court Press, The Destabilization of the Soviet Union by Sean Gervaisi. And a section of it reads, the typical campaign of destabilization has involved two elements. The first is external pressure. The second is internal manipulation. The attacker is bent on creating disruption and turmoil in the target country, but that is only its first objective. The ultimate purpose is to produce political change, typically a change of government, a coup d'etat, or even a revolution. There can be no assurance, however, that disruption and turmoil will produce the desired political results. Therefore, in most cases, the attacking power also intervenes in the internal political process in the target country. And that brings us, again, to the article which I'm going to resume with, The Free Congress Foundation Goes East. We've looked at external pressure, including, in my opinion, the resuscitation of Star Wars and perhaps, the resuscitation of wider German military involvement. And we are now going to proceed with the Free Congress Foundation and its activities with IRG and Boris Yeltsin. And this is one of the vehicles that appears to be being used for internal political manipulation in the Soviet Union, the second of the two pincers described in the Sean Gervaisi destabilization paradigm. Continuing with this article, one of the key dangers in this agenda is the political vacuum it creates, allowing ultra-nationalist forces in a number of republics to increase their influence and possibly take power. Now, by the way, I should read the last couple of sentences again. The IRG has also served as a source of right-wing pressure on Gorbachev to dismantle socialism and the Soviet Union itself. One of the key dangers in this agenda is the political vacuum it creates, allowing ultra-nationalist forces in a number of republics to increase their influence and possibly take power. Such nationalist and fascist elements are already evident in Lithuania and the Ukraine. In the latter republic, the pro-Nazi Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, has gained influence in several parties and has mobilized large demonstrations that honor OUN leaders who abetted Hitler's war on the Eastern Front. Similarly, several Sąjūdis deputies served in German-supported military units in 1944, and Sąjūdis has made declarations against ethnic Russians living in Lithuania. According to some reports, Poles have also been denigrated. It should also be noted that radical reformer, quote-unquote, Boris Yeltsin has dallied with Pomyat, P-A-M-Y-A-T, the foremost Russian fascist group to emerge in the last several years. Pomyat's virulent anti-Semitism compares to the crude propaganda of the early German Nazi Party in the 1920s. We will take a look at Pomyat later on in this installment. Continuing. The FCF is not entirely disconnected from the history of the OUN. The treasurer of the FCF board is George Washington University professor Charles Moser, M-O-S-E-R. Moser also serves on the editorial advisory board of the Ukrainian Quarterly, published by the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, a group dominated by the OUN. The Ukrainian Quarterly has praised military units of the German SS and otherwise justified the OUN alliance with the Third Reich, which reflects the fact that the OUN was politically and militarily allied with Hitler and the Nazi occupation of the Ukraine. The OUN, an international semi-secret cadre organization headquartered in Bavaria, has received financial assistance from the late Franz Josef Strauss, the rightist head of the Bavarian state. Strauss also had a working relationship with Weyrich.
That began from October of 1991, continuing with some of the information from that very same article. The Free Congress Foundation goes east. Finally, Free Congress Foundation's insinuation into the politics of the East must be judged by their selection of Laszlo Pazpor to head their Liberation Support Alliance, quote, which seeks to liberate peoples in Central and Eastern European nations, unquote. Pazpor's involvement in East European politics began in World War II when he joined the youth organization of the Arrow Cross, the Nazi Party of Hungary. When the Arrow Cross was installed in power by a German commando operation, Pazpor was sent to Berlin to help facilitate the liaison between the Arrow Cross and Adolf Hitler. Pazpor was tried and served 2 years in jail for his Arrow Cross activities after an anti-communist government was elected in 1945. He eventually came to the U.S. and established the ethnic arm of the Republican National Committee for Richard Nixon. He brought other Nazi collaborators from the Eastern Front into the GOP. Some were later found to have participated in mass murder during the war. The dormant Arrow Cross has surfaced again in Hungary, where there have been attempts to lift the ban on the organization. Pazpor spent several months in Hungary. When Weyrich later conducted training there, he was provided a list of Pazpor's contacts inside the country. Weyrich reports that he conducted training for the recently formed and now governing New Democratic Forum. Pazpor claims to have assisted some of his friends in Hungary in getting NED funds through his advisory position with the National Endowment of Democracy. In 1989, he spoke at the Heritage Foundation under the sponsorship of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN, a multinational umbrella organization of emigre fascists and Nazis founded in alliance with Hitler in 1943. It is led by the Ukrainian OUN. Pazpor spoke for the Hungarian organization of ABN, which is the Arrow Cross. And again, these organizations were networked together in the pre-World War II and World War II period by the SS. Now, something to remember here. This milieu was projected into Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. It had been part of the Galen Organization, part of the SS. It became part of the Republican Party and then ultimately was projected into the former Soviet Union. It helped to precipitate the rapid disintegration of the Soviet Union, which was followed by an equally rapid privatization program that resulted not only in economic catastrophe for Russia, but also for the oligarch system, which bedevils former Soviet republics, including Ukraine and Russia, to this day. Now, recapping a couple of elements from that article, The involvement of the United, this again from Free Congress Foundation Goes East, the involvement of the United States far right brings with it the potential revival of fascist organizations in the East. One U.S. group, the Free Congress Foundation, has been playing a role in Eastern Europe and Soviet politics and has ties to Boris Yeltsin and the Interregional Deputies Group in the USSR, skipping down. The Interregional Deputies Group was established by Andrei Sakharov, Boris Yeltsin, and others in the summer of 1989. By the end of that year, a training school had been established for candidates to put forward the IRG program. Their electoral success this year propelled Yeltsin to the leadership of the Russian Soviet Socialist Republic. He immediately began forging collaborative relationships with the deeply reactionary leaders of the Lithuanian Sąjūdis Party. The IRG has also served as a source of right-wing pressure on Gorbachev to dismantle socialism and the Soviet Union itself. And that is exactly what happened. Skipping down again, it should also be noted that the radical reformer Boris Yeltsin has dallied with Pomyat, the foremost Russian fascist group to emerge in the last several years. Pomyat's virulent anti-Semitism compares to the crude propaganda of the early German Nazi Party in the 1920s. Now, after Yeltsin did in fact precipitate the disintegration of the former Soviet Union in late 1991, a rapid privatization program was implemented, relying in considerable measure on an organization called the Harvard Institute for International Development, or HIID. This was led by Jeffrey Sachs, S-A-C-H-S, one of the top economic advisors to Bernie Sanders, a top advisor to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and someone who was a member of the Sanders Institute. The Russians said of Jeffrey Sachs, he was an emissary of either Satan or the CIA. I don't believe in the existence of Satan. I've never seen anything concrete that he was CIA, but I think we can say without qualification that is a position in which the agency would have wanted someone, and they are very good at getting what they want. A good article about Jeffrey Sachs was written in the Left Business Observer of August of 2005 by Doug Henwood, H-E-N-W-O-O-D. He, by the way, has a program on Pacifica Station in Berkeley, KPFA, called Behind the News. The long, strange career of Jeffrey Sachs. Again, Doug Henwood, August 2005. I would say it got even stranger when he moved from being arguably the top architect of the precipitous, overly rapid desocialization of the former Soviet Union with disastrous results in Russia and elsewhere, to being a top affiliate of the socialist Bernie Sanders and the socialist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Again, that is a very strange metamorphosis indeed, if with a capital I and a capital F, he is, as many Russians suspect, CIA, that would cast a different, in terms of these programs, a revealing light on events. Again, there is nothing concrete. This is pure conjecture. However, the Russians say of Sachs he was an emissary either of Satan or the CIA. Again, I don't believe in Satan. It certainly is a position in which the CIA would have wanted someone, and given the partial U.S. funding of HIID led by Sachs, that is the kind of program that the CIA often operates behind the scenes. So again, the long, strange career of Jeffrey Sachs. After the Free Congress Foundation and the Paz Tor ABN fascists helped to break up the former Soviet Union, and they are networking with Boris Yeltsin, they hand the ball off, the economic ball, to Jeffrey Sachs. Doug Hemwood writes, Sachs was an advisor to the Yeltsin government in Russia from 1991 to 1994, and also advised Poland, Slovenia, and Estonia as they were beginning their transitions to capitalism. And talking about what happened in Russia. Russia, though, was a thorough disaster, one of the worst collapses in human history. Living standards fell, and the population shrank, an almost unprecedented event in a country not at war. Sachs refuses to accept any blame for the disaster, offering the defense that the Russians didn't take his advice and the West didn't come through with the big aid package he insisted was necessary. Apparently, this is a well-practiced strategy. A 1992 Euro money profile notes, Sachs is reluctant to acknowledge mistakes, defining them in terms of regret when governments do not take his advice. And skipping down. But the outcome illustrates precisely the danger of having the likes of Sachs parachute in, bearing the timeless truths of neoclassical economics. Anyone who knew Russia knew that any rapid privatization would immediately lead to the creation of a new, corrupt elite through massive theft of state property. Anyone who knew Washington knew that no big aid package was ever going to come through, adding to usual U.S. cheapness. A lot of hardliners wanted to see Russia ground into the dirt. In the words of former World Bank economist David Ellerman, who frequently collided with Sachs's work in Slovenia and has followed him intently ever since, quote, only the mixture of American triumphalism and the academic arrogance of neoclassical economics could produce such a lethal dose of gall, unquote. During what officialdom called the transition, there were divisions between those who wanted to reform the existing socialist government and experiment with hybrid forms of ownership, and what Ellerman calls, a quote, the clean post-socialist revolutionaries, many of them with American economics PhDs, who dismissed the reformers as tainted nomenclatura and wanted immediate privatization. Adding to the prestige of the revolutionaries were their trusted foreign advisors, like those from the Harvard Institute for International Development, or HIID, led by Jeffrey Sachs and partly funded by the U.S. government. I'm skipping down. HIID eventually collapsed in scandal when it was revealed that the principals of its Russian project, Andrei Schleifer, S-C-H-L-E-I-F-E-R, and Jonathan Hay, along with their wives, who happened to be mutual fund managers, had been buying Russian stocks and bickering for the privilege of getting the country's first mutual fund license while dispensing advice to the Russian government. Schleifer was one of the trinity of the so-called Harvard Wunderkinder, who were to Russia what the Chicago Boys were to Pinochet's Chile. The other two were Lawrence Summers and Sachs. The U.S. government sued and Harvard shuttered the institute. Sachs, who was not involved in the scandal, decamped to Colombia. Sachs admits to no responsibility for the Russian catastrophe. When I interviewed him in November 2002, I asked him to comment on the incontrovertible fact that he is viewed by scores of millions of Russians, as one journalist has put it, as either an emissary of Satan or of the CIA. He answered that he found this question disgusting, perverse, and like nothing he's ever been asked before. The global elite leads a very insulated life. So again, as he goes from being one of the top architects of the dismantling, the disastrous, precipitous dismantling of Soviet socialism, to being the key economic advisor to socialist Bernie Sanders, a member of the Sanders Institute, and an advisor to the socialist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. From The Nation magazine, an interview with Jeffrey Sachs by Atossa, A-T-O-S-S-A, Araxia, A-R-A-X-I-A, Abrahamian, A-B-R-A-H-A-M-I-A-M, from The Nation of October 12th of 2018. Foreign policy is at a point of complete crisis. Q&A with Jeffrey Sachs. Jeffrey Sachs. I am supporting Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I've been working with the Congressional Progressive Caucus for quite a while on this people's budget and want to continue to develop that. I can make a contribution of getting the numbers in place and showing that this is completely feasible and it's completely what the American people would actually like. So he's now advising Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, as well as being a member of the Sanders Institute, and this is the fellow who took the handoff from the Free Congress Foundation and Laszlo Pastor and the Republican Ethnic Outreach Nazis, and took the handoff of the economic ball and precipitated the disastrous, precipitous desocialization of the former Soviet Union. Again, quite a metamorphosis. Ocasio-Cortez has been under fire for a lot of things. She demonstrated an economic illiteracy in her comments after the failure of the Amazon New York City deal. More about that in our next program. Jeff Bezos himself has an interesting background, quite apart from Amazon's business practices. We may get into that in our next show. But bearing in mind that now Jeffrey Sachs is apparently blowing in AOC's ears as well. From BuzzFeed News of February 15th of 2019 by Paul McLeod, MCLEOD, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got dragged for suggesting people who are unwilling to work should get paid, advocates say. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez couldn't distance herself fast enough last week from a promise on her website that the Green New Deal would take care of people who were, quote, unwilling to work, unquote. First, her team falsely claimed it was doctored by the GOP, then said it was part of a draft version that was mistakenly released. But advocates for the ambitious program known as Universal Basic Income say paying everyone isn't a typo or a bug, and skipping down. I think it's a non-starter. It's not just a political barrier. It is substantively dumb to pay people who are unwilling to work. It's offensive to most Americans who are working really hard, said Representative Ro Khanna, an ardent supporter of the Green New Deal. These are some of the kinds of mistakes that AOC and Saikat Chakrabarty have been making. I wonder to what extent this comes from Jeffrey Sachs. I wonder if Saikat Chakrabarty recruited Jeffrey Sachs to begin advising AOC. If so, the conversation may have gone something like this. Bring Jeff Sachs here. Hello, Jeff. This is Saikat Chakrabarty. Saikat, how you doing? I've heard a lot about you. I've heard a lot about you too, Jeff. While you're putting Bernie Sanders in the White House, we're going to put like-minded people into Congress, and then we can really stick it to the capitalist system. That's my thinking exactly, Saikat. What can I do for you? Hey, listen, Jeff, I have a favor to ask. Hey, anything for a fellow well-to-do, institutionally connected, Harvard-educated socialist? What's on your mind? Listen, I've got this congressional candidate I'm working with, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Oh, yeah, you mean that feisty Puerto Rican bartender who's opposing Amazon's deal with New York City. Yeah, that's the one. Well, she's the very embodiment of our shared working class ideals. Yeah, what do you need? Well, I need someone to advise her economically. I'd be happy to do that, Saikat. I'll give her all of the information she needs to make a very convincing case against Amazon. I appreciate that, Jeff. Saikat, I've got a favor I'd like to ask in return. What's that, Jeff? Listen, can you send me a couple of those Subhas Chandra Bose T-shirts? Those are really snappy. Sure, I'd be glad to, Jeff. You know you can order those online from Amazon. Yeah, I know, Saikat, but it would be more meaningful to me to get them from a fellow member of the proletarian vanguard. Yeah, I know what you mean, Jeff. I'll FedEx a couple of them to you right away. Forward, comrade! To the barricades! Or something like that. More about this, about the Amazon deal, and we're going to talk about some of the other interesting people behind the socialists, the radical Democrats, including the granddaughter of H.L. Hunt. However, that is all we have time for today. This concludes For the Record program number 1064, Socialists for Trump and Hitler. This is being recorded on March 19th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.